Hi, and welcome to Datengarten number 105 in December here with us at CCCB in Berlin. Thank you all for coming. As it was already mentioned, this video is not streamed, or this talk is not streamed, but it will be recorded, so most likely you will have the chance to watch it afterwards, and so also a hello to everybody watching this talk later via MediaCCC.de or YouTube. Today, we have a really nice talk, and if you have questions, you will be able to ask them at the end of the talk. Please raise your hand then, and I'll tell you when it's your turn. And either you get the microphone or we'll repeat your question so that it's also on the video and it's not like playing Jeopardy for everybody watching the recording with hearing the answer but not knowing the question. Today's talk is about IT security weaknesses of emergency alert apps. And I'm really happy to have Malte and Mark here. We tried to schedule this for a bit, and now we finally managed it. So I'm really happy they are here, and I'm really curious what they are now apps for, what I just know from the radio saying like there is an emergency something. So please welcome both of them with a big hands of applause.
Yeah, thank you for having us here. Malte is doing the first part.
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much for having us, actually. This is my brother Mark and myself. I'm Malte. Hi.
Long Mark time no see.
Yeah, thank you very much. We're talking about IT security of emergency apps. I don't know if anybody of you has some emergency apps on his or her or its phone, but we are going very much into detail later on, and maybe talking about why or why not having
we
such
we show steps. A few, and maybe you decide for or against, based on our...
Yeah, that's research. It, because these apps are aiming to alert you in case of emergencies or catastrophes, but it's also actually a little bit of difficult to... evaluate whether you should have it or not, because there are some kind of security flaws that we are actually going to explore, and it's an ongoing journey that we are actually...
Let's call it weaknesses, inherent weaknesses.
Yeah, okay, right. First of all, we're talking about our motivation and later on the requirements, and then coming to the core of our presentation, the IT security and weaknesses of these apps, talking about our results, and then the way forward we are going to have. My brother is actually a security researcher in terms of IT, and working mainly with Java at Oracle. Myself, I'm working as a researcher at the chair of disaster management at the University of Wuppertal, which is kind of an engineering chair at the university, but I am myself a social scientist. So if any questions are concerning IT, this is the guy who you should talk to, actually. Yeah. So we found this as a kind of interesting cross-cutting domain, actually, for ourselves, because the domain of IT and the domain of emergency research comes together in these terms.
I am looking into software since I had a C64, and I'm looking for bugs. I'm not a programmer, I'm looking for bugs. That is my history.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, and that's why actually we're looking into these bugs right now. We call this as an independent research. Actually, we receive no funding for this. We have no time frame. This is our first talk, no, our second talk about this. We
second talk.
Had this in Münster, I don't know, half a year ago.
It was a year ago at OWASP.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So we are not influenced by anybody. We call this a hobby and do this as a kind of explanatory mode. Actually, we are not calling this finished research or something. This is ongoing, and we are trying to learn by it, and we prefer from your side a responsible disclosure.
Like the apps, there will be new bugs with each release, and so we have to keep alert by these bugs.
Keep alert is quite good for this topic.
Okay.
Yeah. We were looking for some history of or failures or whatever how you call it, in terms of emergency apps. And we had this phenomenon actually in Hawaii, I think 1 year ago, 2018, January 2018, there were some traffic billboards actually calling there is a ballistic missile threat inbound to Hawaii, seek immediate shelter, this is not a drill. Actually, this caused a lot of confusion among the Hawaiian population because there were thought to be some kind of ballistic attack coming from, I don't know, Russia or somewhere.
Who knows?
Who knows, actually. But in the end, it was actually a false alarm. Yeah, this message actually was sent by the Hawaiian Emergency Management Agency to all the mobile phone users of Hawaii. Actually, this was not an app. No, it was kind of...
that is the built-in system that the US has.
Yeah.
Also looks for missing childs and stuff like that.
Yeah, doing the... actually, by the mobile phone network. Yeah. Actually, it was considered to be a very life-threatening situation, and it was a false alarm. And yeah, that was actually kind of pretty much confusing to the Hawaiian population. These kind of emergency apps we are looking for are developed to reliably warn the population. And there are a couple of apps developed and also used in Germany. According to this article, we have some political hurdles, practical problems we are going into also, and we see that the design is also not scaling well for larger emergency scenarios. Actually, considering that the mobile phone or the WLAN, Wi-Fi or whatever, the network has to be working in some kind of these situations. Do you want to add something or?
Yes, some architectures opt for some ad hoc networks, but the phones are not routed then.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's some discrepancy between the architectures and what is allowed. So when you are in an emergency situation, maybe you have created scenarios and stuff like that, the network is probably the first to die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Calling critical infrastructures and so on, which are going to be cut off. Thinking of emergency apps, we are considering that the population has to be trustful in such apps. So these emergency apps may deserve more scrutiny than normal software in other domains, such as entertainment, usual entertainment apps. And users expect that the apps supports actually them in disaster scenarios, and that a correct warning functionality is guaranteed, meaning that either that there are no false warnings, and that the warnings that are that if there is a threatening situation, that a warning is in place. Actually, so calling false positive and false negatives alarms are actually threats to the credibility of such infrastructure. What we are talking about later on is also the outdating of disaster apps, which can endanger users. Maybe thinking of false warnings or whatever we are talking about later.
And interception points and giving way for injection attacks just by having outdated software that would allow to hijack some parts of the infrastructure.
The IT security requirements, and now we come to also already your domain, actually.
You do.
we categorize in three categories. Now here in the CIA mode, confidentiality as the first, thinking about private data, keeping data private, thinking about personal information that could be exfiltrated by attackers, the integrity of such apps, which means also the outdating of such apps, maintaining a healthy state of the app, thinking about alterations of code or data, and last but not least, the availability in terms of resilience against malicious input to block the app.
And the backend.
And the backend, yes. These apps are normally acquired via these usual download stores, such as Apple Store and Google Play. And for our research, we chose the Android system for our investigation, as it provides, on the one hand, enough documentation, and also the availability of tools to conduct some in-depth inspection for IT security-related research. These emergency apps, we are talking about now, can be found in the typical app stores. We focus on the major players of these apps. There are several apps. Actually, we found, I don't know, 30 something.
In the total, there were 30 listed by the BBK.
Yeah, BBK is the German Federal Office for Disaster Assistance and Civil Protection. And we also had some contact with them in advance to our talk today. So what Mark did actually, he combined several standard reverse engineering tools as Quark, APK tool, Exodus, Radar, Python, Grep, and OpenSSL.
Which are, some are in-depth reverse engineering tools and some others were used to get metadata out of the artifacts.
When measuring our IT-related weaknesses, we were considering common weakness enumerations, such as, for example, CWE89, which you are going to into detail later on, or if you
want. All the CVEs, yeah. Yes.
All the CVEs, CWEs, and CVEs also. And but I think you will talk to this in a minute.
We'll come to in a detail in a minute. Yeah. Yeah.
So our research objects actually were these five, which were the most common German-speaking apps in Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. NINA is provided by the German Federal Office for Disaster Protection, as we already talked about. KATWAN is developed by the Fraunhofer Institute and used in Germany and Austria. BVAP is a private app, I think, privately developed app.
So far as I saw, it's privately.
Yeah. Warnwetter, everybody knows the Deutsche Wetterdienst, maybe. It's a German meteorological association. And Alert Swiss is, as the name says, an app from Switzerland. You see that the last updates have been just around the corner. And we these are actually indicating the dates of the apps, of the app versions we were considering today.
And also the update cycles.
Yeah, which are kind of sometimes, if I look at KATWAN, a little bit, however. As you can see, they are quite popular. We have some apps that are downloaded more than 1 million times, even for the scale of Switzerland. I think it's also a pretty impressive download rate. And BVAP, I think, is just not as popular as the rest. Yeah, it also combines a lot of features that also the other apps has.
It seems to be popular in the mine area.
In the mine area around Hessen?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, maybe that's where it was developed. I don't know. Yeah. As I said, NINA stands for Notfallinformations- und Nachrichten-App. It combines a lot of information via push notifications. If there is a problem in your region, you can define your region of interest, actually defining the places where you normally are, or you can also have a like where you just are. No, I mean, we are in Berlin, but we are not coming from Berlin, but we can also indicate that we want to be warned wherever we are, using the geo references.
To be pre-warned.
For example,
the shelter yes.
And it shows, for example, if the water is not clean, but it shows also if there has an if there is an evacuation in your area because of a bomb that has been found or whatever, or if there is a chemical threat, and it shows on your this is already KATWAN, sorry, but it has also this kind of map that you can see and where the area of exposure is. KATWAN is stands for Katastrophenwarnung and is developed by the Fraunhofer Institute, and it normally features the same as NINA does, a little bit different in style, but generally the same stuff. However, NINA has the approach to combine everything that all the apps show, KATWAN and BVAP, but NINA, however, until now, doesn't show everything.
But can you go back? So that was actually one of the few days where in Münster was no bomb warning. Yeah. So sometimes in Münster, a lot of the cities is closed because they have to be rerouting of the traffic due to bomb warnings. So I took this as different picture.
This is the Bürger Info and Warn app called BIWAP. And here we see that it also features something different from the other usual disaster warning apps, because here you can also see, for example, where is the traffic radar, so that you drive accordingly. But normally it also features the same stuff as the other apps do. DWD Warnwetter is obviously focusing on weather situations, which also the other apps show if there is a storm in your area or heavy rain. The other apps also feature, but this one is explicitly dedicated to weather threats. Finally, Alert Swiss does all the stuff that the other apps also do, but focusing on Switzerland. Taking over?
I'm taking over. So now we leave the global view on it and come to the more implementation and IT focused view on these apps, and let's start with a few typical weaknesses that may be in this application. So there could be a SQL injection, there could be information disclosure having only confidential impact, you may execute your app with unnecessary privileges, clear text passwords, you may have problems with certificates or missing encryption, or you may have old grandma components with known vulnerabilities. So everybody may have heard about SQL injection. So you have some kind of SQL statement and you do some concatenation and the attacker inserts some text. So for example, with this car, he has a number plate and then the database might be dropped at the police station. It's also a nice comic at XKDB with the Bobby tables. Why do you call your child Bobby tables? And then the database is owned. Information disclosure, what can be in? So there are data which unintentionally should not be, or intentionally should not be disclosed, but due to some covert channel in the app or some alert text or artifact in the app which could resurface, there might be information. For example, what we found on this US app, there could be names of the users left in app. This is a really simple example, but remember, there could be keys in the app, there could be other credentials. Execution with unnecessary privileges, so you go up a privilege level you are not supposed to be, either you're using the wrong execution model or the implementer chooses to give you more rights or imply more rights that you have per detail, so you have probably the app, the phone gives you the opportunity to upgrade your app permissions, and then you run with more permissions than the default. So for example, here you have an app that requires to write to the external storage. This probably gives the app way to write on your SD card and probably modify data. There are other examples, but this is the most common one. Unprotected storage of credentials, storing a password or a token in clear text that may result in system compromise or taking over other systems or owning your account. So some apps, they have the ability to include a Twitter account and the API says, oh, don't include this API secret in your code. It should never be human readable. But what this app did, they put it in the app resources and it's readable for everyone. So this Twitter account is no longer than used by the application. It could be owned by some malicious entity, and the malicious entity sends 2 million Twitter messages, and then the account probably will be closed. And what that means is that the app maybe have to be redeployed and is not available to the user base. So also think about the backend. Improper certificate validation is also what we found. You would imply a trusted way between the client and the backend, which is backed up by X509 certificates and the trust relationships and the third path and whatever is related to that. So the software should not, does not validate or incorrectly or partially validates the certificate. And this is a typical weakness here. What we have here is broken. Broken. Now it's dead. Okay, so you see here where it's, we always have the cursor, you have a hostname verifier. The hostname verifier is, its purpose is to verify, does the host match what is in the certificate? And that is what has to be implemented in this method. And the API, all the designers of this all imply that you really check what the name of the host is to the certificate. Is it somehow sound? Can it be the host? Or is it some man in the middle? Is this a Charles proxy or whatever? And here it just shortcuts all this magic with the true. One of the typical crypto fails, or maybe it was a Friday afternoon implementation. So coming to another weakness, missing encryption of sensitive data. So the software does not encrypt sensitive data or does not use sensitive data in an encrypted way, or puts the user out to unencrypted scenarios, which you don't want to have. So we have, so here would you have see the logo, you would see what app that is, but we filtered that out. So this app, this Canada Emergency Alert app, it opens a web view. But this opens the web view to the HTTP host, to the HTTP site, instead of the also available HTTPS site. So there you have, you would give the data of the user to all intermediate paths in the middle between the connection of the client and the backend. And with SSL, you typically wouldn't allow that if you have full end-to-end encryption. So that was the availability part here, the confidentiality part. Coming to my favorite, and we will see it has a large impact. My favorite weakness is the one with using components with known vulnerabilities. So you all know when you have outdated software, the software may be exposed to vulnerabilities. And once upon a time, the OWASP group added that as a meta category. This is now gone because so therefore added the version 2.1.2 tag. So you have these build chains, you have native code in the apps, and the native code drags in third-party components. Also the Dalvik code drags in third-party components. And once you drag that in your build system, fine. Who reminds you to update that when, for example, a new CVE comes in? Probably nobody. You can register to a site that gives you a trigger for that. And then you would have to feed that in your build system. But in the short-lived mobile apps, this typically doesn't happen. So for example, this app, it has an outdated SQLite. Could be tolerable because it's just from this year. It's just from just out. But it also has a vulnerable libxml bug from 2016. And so you have remote code execution vulnerability in this app, and it's already 2019. Of course, it's a potential vulnerability because you don't know if the control path on in the app calls that vulnerable code. But you never know. Maybe an attacker knows how to divert the code to that the control flow to this code, and then the vulnerability is actually relevant. There are other ones, for example, in this US EMA app, you have an old lib PNG. So they have put this in a red box, and it is a null pointer reference bug, but it has a high CVE score and CVSS score. And here you have XPAT from some time, and it's also outdated. So that were the examples. Now we come to the apps that we just described. In the following, we will be looking into these apps. We have anonymized these. But the set is not too large. You can try at home which vulnerability applies to which app. Who knows how many permutations do you need to find it out? 20 or something. So we have this app, let's call it app number one. Currently, this app bundles an outdated Amazon AWS copy of HTTP client. You can easily find out in the version properties that it's outdated. It does read, write external storage, and it references its own homepage. Probably not a big deal, but also is we Windows communication framework backend via HTTP, and it could be misused in a man-in-the-middle attack, such as a malicious redirect or a traffic problem causing the entire service to go down. It also has hard-coded shared credentials to a service backend, and if an attacker could take out the credentials, also, it may be game over for the backend, or you have another visitor in your backend. It had a problem with exported receivers that has been fixed. Looking into it from a privacy side, we also looked into the Exodus database, and we found zero trackers here, which is good. So this app seems to concentrate on informing the users instead of exfiltrating user data and behavior data. So the fun fact is here, this is the only app also which has no suppress-lint annotations. Who has worked with suppress-lint so far? You? You use it daily, suppress-lint? No, why not? You write good code, and but it it's so the voice from the audience was that suppress-lint is not just a security specified issue, that you don't suppress only security warnings, but also stuff like, oh, I'm using this suppress-lint. What other categories would you have there? Like,
might be warned that the layout should be translated to right to left for Arabic languages or whatever, then it's okay to use it.
So it's not only related to for the tape. It's not just related for security, but it also may have alert bad situations for graphical layout, and that would be alarmed via the suppressant, or the suppressant would mute these alarms. Was that correct?
Yes.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, so you wave these warnings that the nice compiler gives you to make better code, and you would suppress lint then, and then the code would go with these weaknesses, and an attacker probably would look into apps that have large parts of suppressed lint, so he could find out or get an impression about the code smell of this application, especially for the security suppressors. So the next application, it uses execsql not only with a compiled statement, but it only uses string concatenation, except for the import libraries, but for its own code, which may give way to SQL injection, as we just saw. So that untrusted value could come from an E10, from untrusted input. So if you have a receiver and that gets data and it, that is passed then to the SQL statement, that could be a problem. It also has a problem with certificate validation. It connects to multiple IPA endpoints which have self-signed certificates. That might not be the way to introduce trust into the app via the user. So, and CVE 3.11 issue, so the application grabs data from an HTTP URL instead of the HTTPS URL, which then could be any point in the middle could then inject data into the app, for example. All peanuts, we look into CVE 9.3.7. The subdomain that's serving the warning messages runs on an Nginx engine X, that's how it's written out. And that runs on 1.14.2, which is a legacy version which does no longer receiving updates. So when a CVE comes out for engine X1.14.2, this provider will have a busy weekend to update that to, yeah, not again a legacy version, maybe he wants to go to 1.17. And we have all heard of Huawei. Huawei is not trustable for 5G, but Nginx is trustable for warning system backends. So there's a slightly discrepancy between who we trust and who we don't trust. Okay, that is this app. It uses also Play Store services and exports behavior data via Crashlytics or Firebase analytics. And there's also a fun fact that the time in the certificate is lead. So going to the next application, this application shares the API key and the password to the backend service. It has all this in the APK file. So you can take out this key and password and directly connect to the backend service. And we informed the vendor in early 2018. They said this works as designed, and they probably will go away in an upcoming major version, which is probably the the standard answer for that. Also, this application has outdated Nginx backend servers, and it uses write external storage permissions, which are dangerous to inject data. When was it? Last week when we approached? So the APK on the vendor side was a half year behind the Google Play version. And we asked, what is the scenario? How can people with who are somehow have an allergic reaction against Google Play, how can they have a current version of your app? It's half year old. And how can I update that? Do you have a update store? No, we don't have it. So that was the only answer. And now last week they updated this. Now we have to wait, is this a one-off action or have they automated it? Will version N plus one be also be on their website? So again, this is an app which likes to share data with Google and tracks behavior with analytics and exports that. And this is the app that has the most suppressed annotations. Coming to app 4. So this app, it has old libxml. We just saw it. That is a code, remote code execution one, which would be relevant if it would pass untrusted input. It bundles the native SQLite, which is also known to have a vulnerability. It has open old OpenSSL 102, which goes EOL this year, and probably and libxslt of an unknown version. Since our OWASP talk, they fixed the bundled SQLite, but you see there's a reoccurring Groundhog Day experience with fixing the bugs. The next bug is just behind the corner. The privacy issues here, it needs again Google Play Services, has trackers, and it has, maybe there's a scenario where the developer name in the binary would be a problem. Oh, here you have developer, I blackmail you and you put this code in your app. Think about what you think. So the fun fact is that this has just some exceptions that caught my eye. There was no other fun in this app. So coming to app 5, this bundles again SQLite. Why bundle SQLite if you have SQLite in your framework? Because it's not flexible enough. Maybe some thing to think for Google to think about to make SQLite more usable. Do you SQLite in your development? Question to the audience who codes. Yeah. You, for example?
Me is the part of the audience that codes.
Yeah.
I can use it.
You use it? And you are working on Android apps, so the answer was that he codes with it. And do you develop Android apps? And do you use the app, the framework on the phone, or do you use native SQLite?
I'm using the one on the phone. I try to hide it behind as much RAM as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really import the native one.
So the answer was that it's possible to use the SQLite on the phone. There are not many reasons to not to use it. But still, here this native API, this native code is imported into the app and also imports the vulnerabilities. In addition to the SQLite, this app bundles an outdated partial copy of Apache HTTP of an unknown version. And here we have the reason for bundling the SQLite. This application uses large parts of native code. So you can either code in Dalvik framework or code in just in native code or bundle both or have various scenarios. But this app has a large proportion of the implementation in native code. In native code, we know there are buffer overflows, there are heap overflows, there is a lot of memory management issue which you have implicit in DEX or in Java. So there's an enhanced risk of running with more privileges, memory management facility than you would normally require. So the native SQLite that we reported was fixed, but here again they have a new one. again, tracks with Crashlytics. And there's also a fun fact in this app. The app provides a full access for firefighters. So they give you out a code. And the code unlocks parts of the app. So there is a hidden nugget for reverse engineers in this application. So looking into the summary, we have a couple of isolated discoveries here. But what is really interesting is that all apps have outdated components and do not package the current version of the embedded components. Instead, they give you old versions, and that might be vulnerable. So plus lint, only one app. So the numbers, let them speak for themselves. Yeah, I give back to Malte for the summary and the last words.
Yeah, two last slides. Thank you very much. Actually, we saw that these emergency apps all have typical security weaknesses, considering not only mobile components, but also the backend infrastructure. We see with every app a dependency on commercial infrastructure, such as the Google Play Store. We see that privacy is an issue, as it could be affected by third parties. The warning functionality is not prioritized during runtime, actually being busy potentially with sending trackers or displaying ads. Yeah, as we saw in one app, I think app number 5, we see an advanced functionality that is only available to those who require the paid version.
Imagine you are in an emergency and you first have to pay €2 to use it.
For example, yeah. Yeah, what we are doing actually from now on, or already work ongoing, is a constant iterative progress process. We see that some apps are updated and each new version brings new surprises, as we already saw. Some updates are proposed since actually early 2018 for a version of Nina, for example, which is now optimistically expected.
It's the same statement next year.
Yeah, that was the official statement actually, but also already mentioned to us that it would have been published last year. We are expanding our research to international apps, currently ongoing. We focused on the German-speaking ones, but you also saw already some examples and findings of our ongoing research considering international apps. What these vendors may consider is removing their dependency to the Google Play Store. Having a vendor-neutral distribution channel for these apps, especially if they are published by some public institution,
by the taxpayer.
As said, we were looking at apps from Germany and Switzerland, also covering Austria to some extent. We chose some research which was based on the Smarter project, which was a project also conducted by the German Federal Office for Disaster Management, called Smarter, where they took into account international emergency apps, which is also publicly available, this kind of study on, I think, smarter-project.de or .eu.
You will find it via Google.
You will find it, exactly. This app, however, this list was made in 2017, so we also had to do some updates and look what apps were still alive, because some of them are already
dead. Dead, or they weren't apps at all.
Yeah, for example. And this is a kind of list that was extracted from this kind of research. Maybe potentially some of these will be covered in our next talks.
I don't know. This is the to-do list.
Yeah. So before opening the Q&A, we would like to thank the tool authors, of course, the app developers who responded to our requests, Mitre for providing the CWE, to the Chaos Computer Club, and of course to you, our wonderful audience tonight. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, do we have questions? Yes. Wait. You get the mic. I'll run around.
Okay. I don't know if you like to talk about it, but have you looked at back-end interfaces as well?
Yes, you may have seen that we did not deeply look into the backend interfaces. We just saw what versions, for example, were exposed in the proxy. So if you have an outdated web server or an outdated application server, that would probably be something an attacker would like to not attack the client, maybe attack the backend first. That's a threat I see there.
Further questions?
What about offline emergency apps that they use mesh networks, for example, for create networks locally with the people that it's in the same area? Are also vulnerable to?
Yes, that would be probably vulnerable to social engineering attacks. For example, you don't only have actors. These actors are probably not all, what's the word? All actors are benign. Not all actors are good interacting with you. Probably there are some criminals. They emit a message, all go to the center, and then they get all your belongings from you. So not... Yes, with these apps, probably there has to be a trust model established. And I don't see that there's currently a model. I saw one article, I think it was in the BBK magazine, where they promoted this approach, this ad hoc network, people talking to each other on an ad hoc network, but that is not the operating model of the phones. You need a rooted phone for that in the first place. And it gets more difficult with each iteration, probably. We can talk to other, in the end, probably more about it.
So you've looked into the actual application security, but what about reliability in the sense of, you could imagine like the entirety of class of of warning apps has the problem of latency when it comes to notifying a large amount of users, especially compared to the short message-based, so network-based services that you mentioned in the example when you started out your talk, which probably scales better given that it's on a network level and can use broadcast as opposed to lots of unicast. Have you found studies that detail on that, or have you looked into that yourself?
So there's... Google, for example, is emergency services for the phone. And government and other agencies can opt into that. And there are a lot of countries that use it, so you don't have to go to the app layer. You can go to the operating system layer. But I think in Germany it's adapted by the Berlin firefighters. I'm not from here, so I just read it in the... So it's possible, but then your entire model of having a service that is distinguishable from others is gone if you have it on the operating system level. I think it's a business question.
Further questions?
Hi, thanks. Why did you anonymize the apps and didn't say this app is Katwan, Nina, etc.?
Because they are open vulnerabilities where we talk with them. And so It would be good if these apps would give out advisories when they fix something on Google Play, but they don't do it yet. So then you would rediscover these vulnerabilities if they have this entire push plus disclosure of bugs.
I think one of the interesting sources of information is location-based data that I think many or almost all of these apps leak or send to the backends. Have you looked at privacy declarations, how this information is handled, if it is shared with other entities, if it is statistically processed? Because I think that is one of the interesting information that all these apps send to the backend.
That is probably one of the default clicks you have to do in Google Play just to get it started. And then you get the app from Google Play, and then it's implicit. But I'm not sure if this is... I'm a normal user, I click and click and click, and all of a sudden I'm in this exfiltration model of my data. So I think, yes, that's an important thing to look into.
Do we have further questions? Okay, so both of you are still here a bit, so if somebody still has a question, you can just come over and ask them. Please give another round of applause for our speakers.
Thank you. Feel free to contact us on LinkedIn or wherever you find us via Google. And,
Yeah, thank you very much for being here. It was a pleasure. It was a really nice talk. And yes, also thank you to all of you for being here.